this would likely be equivalent to a thin coating of dust on your windshield.
Lava is flowing and ash falling from an ongoing volcanic eruption in Southwest. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, September 27th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, engineers that worked on the Mount Polly mine faced charges of negligence.
Government needs to really step up to the plate and really hold these companies accountable.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting. Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnosis and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com.
Much of the country tuned into an extraordinary U.S. Senate hearing today. Professor Christine Blasey Ford alleged she was attacked when she was 15. The man she accuses, Brett Kavanaugh, denied he did any such thing and fought to keep his nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court alive. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin is here to provide her take on this. Hey, Liz.
Hi, Casey.
Liz, the whole world wants to know what Senator Murkowski thinks about this. What can you tell us?
Casey, I have a confession to make. I did not find Senator Murkowski today.
Really?
I know. Her staff said she wasn't available. I know she canceled an energy committee hearing so that she and every senator on her committee could hole up and watch the Kavanaugh hearing in real time. I do know one reporter from the Energy Trade Press who talked to Murkowski briefly today. The senator told Environment and Energy News that she found Ford very credible, but she was withholding her judgment until she heard from Judge Kavanaugh, who at that point hadn't testified yet. I do have one piece of tape, a vignette to play for you.
Okay, set that up for me, Liz.
I went to the Hart Senate office building. That's where Murkowski's office is. And I ran into, of all people, Joan Baez, who was there as part of this kind of solemn, slow-moving protest in the atrium of the Hart building. They were doing this call-and-response thing. I think they were echoing Professor Ford's words there. I believe it's my civic duty to tell what happened to me. And if you listen really carefully, you can hear the Capitol Police telling them to cease and desist.
Interesting. More protests. Liz, do we know what Senator Murkowski is hearing from Alaskans?
Certainly she's hearing from a lot of Alaskans, particularly Native groups, women, and advocates of the Affordable Care Act who have been urging her to vote no. Pollster Ivan Moore just released some survey results showing more Alaskans want her to confirm than reject. But he says among her base, the people who said they had a positive view of Senator Murkowski, far more of them wanted her to vote no on Kavanaugh. And Moore said the survey, he ran the survey Friday to Tuesday, and he said opinions were in flux.
All right. Well, thanks for following this, Liz.
Yeah, thank you, Casey.
That was Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin. For the first time, the state's Department of Transportation is in the driver's seat when it comes to navigating the legal environmental requirements that come along with big transportation projects. And the Federal Highway Administration wants to know how they're doing. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney has this story.
Alaska doesn't have a dedicated fund for state highway projects. Something like 90% of the projects in the state get federal money. And that means that when the state wants to work on a highway, build a new one, widen an old one, there's usually some kind of federal environmental review. Typically, that review falls under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. In the past, the Federal Highway Administration handled that review. But an Obama-era law gave states the option to take control of some of that process. And last year, Alaska joined six other states that have taken the feds up on that offer. There's evidence that the states that have taken over this work are saving a lot of time in the permitting process. In early September, the Federal Highway Administration put out the results of its first audit of how Alaska's Department of Transportation is handling its new responsibilities. There are a few things that could be improved, like one instance where the state should have held a public hearing and didn't. And there are questions about having enough staff and allocating the time and money they need for training. But there are other areas where federal auditors say the state is doing pretty well, like bringing in legal help early on in the process. With this new power comes new responsibility, namely legal liability. It means the state can be sued for these decisions in federal court. The state added a new attorney in the Department of Law, specifically to make sure that projects are legally defensible. The state's Department of Transportation added four other positions to cope with the new responsibilities, too. The Federal Highways Administration is taking comments on that audit until October 5th. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Juneau.
Three engineers that worked on the troubled Mount Polley mine face formal allegations of negligence and unprofessional conduct. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the trio faced disciplinary hearings by their professional peers over their work leading up to a catastrophic spill.
About 4 years ago, a tailings dam failed late one summer night. It sent millions of gallons of mine waste into the transboundary watershed that flows between BC and Southeast Alaska. Three engineers responsible for the tailing dam's design and operations leading up to the spill now face disciplinary hearings next year by the professional group that licenses engineers in British Columbia. If found guilty, they could have their licenses suspended and or be fined thousands of dollars. An attorney for one of the three engineers declined comment. Critics of the open-pit copper-gold mine note it's the first time anyone is being held responsible for the pollution. The provincial government declined to sanction the mining company over the spill.
So I don't think it's right that they are going to throw these three people under the bus and continue to proceed with their mining project.
Loretta Williams chairs First Nations Women Advocating Responsible Mining. The group released a report this week warning that without proper oversight, future mining spills are likely.
Government needs to really step up to the plate and really hold these companies accountable so that nothing like this happens again in the future.
The Mount Polley mine, which is upstream from salmon-producing rivers that feed into Alaska, resumed operating in 2016. BC's Environment Ministry released a statement Wednesday calling the allegations against the engineers unproven, but noted there's an ongoing joint investigation by provincial and federal authorities. The outcome of the inquiry into the 2014 dam breach will be forwarded to Canadian prosecutors for consideration, the statement said. The Mount Polley mine's owner has also been plagued by financial troubles. It recently had a key loan repayment deadline extended from October 1st until the middle of February. But the future of Imperial Metals remains uncertain. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a former Sitka police chief publishes a crime novel set in Alaska.
All I really know is rural policing. Sitka is the biggest town I've ever worked in. So I'm talking about stuff I know about.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
A former Alaska bank employee suspected of leaving the country with $4.3 million 7 years ago has been extradited from Mexico to face federal charges. U.S. Attorney Brian Schroeder says 33-year-old Gerardo Adon Cazares Valenzuela, who was known as Gary Cazares, was extradited after serving time in a Mexico prison. Cazares is a former cash vault services manager for KeyBank in Anchorage. Prosecutors say that in 2011, Cazares used a cart to carry out three computer-sized boxes filled with the millions of dollars in cash. Cazares that night flew on a private charter to Seattle, bought guns and a car, and drove to Tijuana, Mexico. He continued south on a bus and was stopped at a checkpoint and arrested. Cazares was convicted in Mexico of smuggling cash and firearms. Lava is flowing from Mount Veniaminoff, a volcano on the Alaska Peninsula north of Perryville. Chris Way-Thomas is a geologist at the Alaska Volcano Observatory.
So far, it's been producing a lava flow on the south flank of that intracaldera cone. It's about 800 to 850 meters in length, and there have been some minor ash emissions as well.
This most recent bout of unrest began September 4th when people in the village of Perryville spotted ash coming from the volcano. According to Way-Thomas, it is highly unlikely that ash will reach the village or the Chignik communities at the current level of activity.
The ash fall has been very limited and largely confined to the summit caldera, so roughly 5 miles at most from the vent.
Lava extruding from the mountain is visible from the air and from Perryville. If the volcano begins to exhibit heightened signs of unrest, like bigger earthquakes or plumes, that could mean ash fall in the village, but it probably won't be dangerous.
This would likely be equivalent to a thin coating of dust on your windshield and probably not going to be in amounts that are hazard in any way.
There are three other volcanoes showing signs of unrest on the Alaska Peninsula: Cleveland Volcano, the Great Sitkin Volcano, and one of the cones on Mount Cerebrus at Semisupuchnai Volcano in the Western Aleutians. As for Veniaminoff, Way-Thomas says that the current activity could continue for weeks. Dr. Richard Monsager has been in charge of Alaska hospitals and public health for decades. He came to Alaska in the 80s after a stint in the Indian Health Service and since then has headed up the Alaska Native Medical Center and the state's Department of Public Health. In April, he retired as the CEO of Providence Hospital, and now he's starting a new chapter working for the Rasmussen Foundation as a senior fellow. He'll spend the next 3 years trying to leverage the foundation's resources to partner with other groups reducing homelessness in Anchorage. Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes spoke with Monsager about the new initiative.
About 6 years ago, I talked to an ER doc in Spokane, and he said something that I have plagiarized and used many, many times since. In his view, as an ER doc, the single and most important prescription is housing. As I've thought about that, it also links with the issue of home. Where does one feel safe? Is there a place one can psychologically and physically say, this is my space, and feel protected? So mental health and spiritual health and physical health are really linked to the issue of home and housing. There's really good data, I think, that's very persuasive, that when people before and after being on the streets or in a apartment, their health conditions stabilize, their ER hospital usage drops, their substance abuse use drops. The person's life is healthier, and I would argue that the community is healthier, as people can then have a place where they can then deal with the issues in their life. And there's pretty good data that a lot of people are then able to move on to new chapters in their life.
This is something the municipality has been pretty active in and assigned positions and assigned resources. I'm curious why a private foundation like Rasmussen felt it needed to step in.
The story I've heard is that in June, the board of Rasmussen Foundation got into a discussion about this from the point of view of both the economic issues here in the city of how can we have a healthy community when the visuals and people's sense of safety is degrading, and also from a moral perspective of are we as a community doing the best we can to take care of all community residents. And so the board directed staff to say, what could we do that would be useful to the community, if anything? And so that's kind of launched and started this journey we're on.
Is there a instance that you remember from your time working in hospitals and the healthcare industry more directly where you felt like you were seeing the lack of housing and homelessness as a epidemiological issue, a story that sticks with you?
The stories, I think, that have most directly impacted me over the last couple of years have been as we launched a small medical respite clinic down at Brother Francis Shelter. I thought that when we launched it, it would be people with frostbite, skin infections, and so on that didn't need to be in a hospital but should be off the street. But more than that, it turned out a man who had renal cell carcinoma and needed chemotherapy, another woman who had severe congestive heart failure and needed medication fine-tuning. I didn't really think about those kinds of problems as being for healing, to stabilize. Getting them off the streets is really important. What I know as a hospital leader is every day of the week we had patients stuck in the hospital because of a lack of a safe place to discharge, and home was almost always in that discussion.
For you, in the next couple of years, what will success look like?
So my dream is that we really make substantial improvement to the vision of Anchored Home, which is that homelessness becomes rare, brief, and one time. That people can be, when they move into crisis or show up in town in crisis, that we can get them into home within 30 to 45 days or so. If we can make real improvement and real change in that, I think Anchorage will be a much healthier place.
That was Dr. Richard Monsager talking with Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes. Next month, the State Department of Education will pick Alaska's Teacher of the Year. This week, we've been profiling each of the five finalists from across the state. Jacob Berra is the Fine Arts Chair at Eagle River High School. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, he has students at all levels, from kids who've never considered art as a hobby to those who are just as passionate as he was in his art class.
Growing up in Wisconsin, Jacob Berra's grandfather was his biggest inspiration. Not only did he inspire him to serve in the military, but he instilled a lifelong passion for art.
My grandpa was an artist, and he was a poet, and he was very creative. And, you know, when I was growing up, my parents split, and so I was always grandpa's shadow. And just kind of watching him work in the wood shop and watching him create really sort of started to instill a passion for art. And then just as I, you know, moved through school, I had inspiring teachers that sort of kept that passion going.
After 8 years in the Marines, Berra went to college to study art. During his summers, he worked at a camp in Wisconsin that inspired him to become a teacher.
We worked with kids with disabilities, so hearing impairments, visual impairments, cognitive disabilities. It was just a really life-changing experience, and so that's where I really figured out that I wanted to take art and use it as a way of teaching.
Berra loved paging through Alaska Magazine as a kid and always had plans to come to the 49th state. He and his wife, also a teacher, moved here in 2003. Berra taught at a few schools in Anchorage before Eagle River High opened in 2005. He was hired as the visual arts teacher and fine arts chair. In selecting Berra as a Teacher of the Year nominee, the Department of Education highlighted that Berra grew a comprehensive arts program from the ground up, teaching everything from drawing to ceramics, Berra's specialty. Berra was also highlighted for helping start the annual Fine Arts Cabaret, an event that brings together students from art and music programs to showcase their work to the community.
You know, when the audience comes in and they walk around and they see the work, it's fun just to sort of step back and watch my students interact with the community and speak about their work. To me, that's the best advocacy, is having a student speak about their passion for the art and what they're doing in schools.
Berra is happy to instill a passion for art in his students, but he also finds he's inspired by the work of his students.
I will bring in some of my work and set it out and talk about how I made it. And all of a sudden, you'll look in the back room where pots are drying out and you'll see five or six little mugs that look like mine. But I will be honest and say that sometimes there's a teapot or a vase that a student makes that I get back into my studio and say, that was pretty cool how they did that. And so it's definitely reciprocal in terms of the learning and teaching.
Berra says seeing students progress from freshmen to seniors, not only in their art, but also in their aspirations, is what keeps him driven to teach. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. Do you want to work at a job that contributes to the health of your community? Well, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH, is hiring. Search offers full-time jobs that include health, vision, and dental benefits, as well as paid time off and retirement savings. For more information, visit search.org/jobs and view open positions. Start a rewarding career helping others at Search. Healthy is here. This message sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium.
The Haines Borough Assembly has been discussing the status of a permit for tour operator Alaska Excursions. In February, several former employees complained about the company's safety practices. Then, a few months later, a man drowned during a canoe tour offered by the company. KHNS's Henry Leisha has this report.
Assemblyman Tom Morfitt has been urging the Haynesborough to consider revoking the permit for Alaska Excursions after Stephen Todd Willis drowned during a tour of the Davidson Glacier in July. According to the state trooper report on the incident, Willis and 10 other passengers entered the water when a canoe tipped over due to an engine malfunction above a fast-moving section of the Davidson Glacier River. At a meeting Tuesday, Assemblyman Tom Morfitt moved to ask Alaska Excursions owner Robert Murphy if he intends to renew the permit for the canoe tour at Glacier Point. Assemblyman Sean Mady countered that the company hasn't even applied to renew its permit.
If we go to one specific permit holder, I could see how that would be seen by any attorney worth their degree as discrimination or, you know, maybe even harassment. The ball's in his court to see if he's willing to renew.
Morfitt responded that the Alaska Excursions tour permit is different given the company's history.
I think we owe it to the man who died to stop and consider this company's record, which was brought to us through the testimony of a dozen former employees that said something bad is going to happen, and we ignored it.
Alaska Excursions has faced severe criticism of its safety practices from several of the company's past employees. In February, former canoe guide Alton Smith wrote a letter to the Haynesborough Assembly detailing canoe maintenance issues. He said that the most dangerous part of the canoe tour was the risk of an outboard motor failing above the rapids of the Davidson Glacier River. Alaska Excursions owner Robert Murphy has denied the claims of former employees and said that the company has been reviewing safety protocol and maintenance practices over the last few months. In an interview with the state troopers, Murphy stated that the engine of the canoe that capsized was new in May and had been tested regularly. The borough manager has the authority to revoke permits in Haines. Borough manager Deborah Schnabel said that she did not revoke the Alaska Excursions tour permit immediately because the state trooper's report on the incident did not indicate negligence.
I myself, as a tour operator, suffered a death of a client. Things happen, and if we are not willing sometimes to consider that not every death that occurs is something that could have been prevented if this, if that, then we don't move very far.
Ultimately, the assembly voted against Morfitt's motion to ask Murphy whether or not he intends to renew the tour permit. However, the assembly did direct the borough manager to look further into the issue and seek legal advice on the matter. In Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
A new crime thriller based in far western Alaska was penned by a newcomer to fiction, but a veteran in law enforcement. Former Sitka Police Chief Sheldon Schmidt has published his first novel, Bush Blues. The story explores the life of a regular guy cop doing police work in some extraordinary circumstances. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Sheldon Schmidt was Sitka's police chief for 12 years, from 2005 to 2017, and its lieutenant for 2 years prior to that. But he was no newbie to Alaska. Prior to becoming a police officer, he spent 10 years fishing in Bristol Bay. He says he was a bit of a bar rat and maybe the kind of guy local police kept an eye on. But he knew that there were stories in western Alaska. His trips back into more urban areas proved that.
Whenever I would come back in and talk to people, they were always kind of fascinated by it. I'd tell stories about what it was like to live out there. People wanted to hear about it. So I'd talk about it, and I thought, you know, I should write some of this down because it was interesting to me and it changed my life living out there.
His novel is called Bush Blues. It introduces us to Police Chief Brady Snow, based in Togiak, Alaska. Togiak is a long way from Sitka, and not just geographically. The story taps deeply into the indigenous culture of the region, the fishing and subsistence economies, the fierce pride of the people who have carved out a life under difficult living conditions. Somehow, Brady Snow manages to make his way in this world too, just like the author who created him.
Most of the things in the book are real life, real things that happen. You know, it might have happened someplace up north, or it might have been an event that happened someplace else that I put into Togiak, or a person who's I've described as a real person, but now is in a different setting, that type of thing. But the book itself is based on real life.
Schmidt's first job as a police officer was in Togiak in 1995. He was promoted to chief after only 6 months. He subsequently spent 5 years at Point Hope and Barrow and a brief stint on the peninsula. Brady Snow, in some respects, is an outsider in Togiak, but he knows the rules and plays by them. He is the most patient cop in fiction you're likely to meet.
Specifically didn't want him to be like a heroic figure. I wanted him to be a regular guy, not a Jack Reacher kind of guy who has all these special skills, but a regular guy. And I'm hoping that came through in the book.
The fictional state troopers in Bush Blues are concerned that Brady Snow's calm demeanor means he's gone soft and has become too enmeshed in the community. Snow's brain is always processing, though, whether it's his calm investigation of possible suspects or trying to score a date with a nurse. Snow understands that some things can't be rushed.
All I really know is rural policing. Sitka's the biggest town I've ever worked in. So I'm talking about stuff I know about. And it is different, though. When you're out in a small town, the person that you arrest today may be filling up your fuel tank tomorrow or your water tank. So you're treating people differently, I think, than you can. There's no anonymity.
Bush Blues is published by Kohler Books and available in many bookstores and online. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Rasha McChesney and Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, Henry Leisha in Haines, and Robert Woolsey in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Raven, Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state from Valdez, Anchorage, and more. Information at flyraven.com. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Did you know there's no safe amount of alcohol to drink while pregnant? But why should this matter if you're not pregnant or not trying to be? Because nearly half of all pregnancies are unplanned. Many women don't know they're pregnant right away. You could get pregnant and expose your baby to alcohol even before you know you're pregnant. If you're having unprotected sex, don't drink. Learn how FASDs impact everyone, even you, at letstalkfasdak.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.